Good morning, everyone. We now go back to the book of Numbers. And one of the reasons that we do this and this Bible reading plan, some of you might be going through that journey with us either now or in the future, where we're reading through the entire Bible and studying it together. And we tend to go from Old to New Testaments. And one of the reasons we do that is if you started in a three-year Bible reading journey and you began in the Old Testament, and let's say you just did it in the order of the Bible. First of all, the Bible is not written in order. So even if you started in Genesis and went through the end to Revelation, although there's some order to it, there's many books that are very much out of order as it regards to the dating of the books and when the events happen. That's not how the Bible's put together. It's put together more by style of book and some order, but not strictly order. So anyways, the other thing is the Old Testament is about, you know, 3/4 of the Bible. That's just a, you know, estimate I'm pulling out of my head right now. It's probably even more than that. And, you know, you would have to take 2 full years or more to read the Old Testament before you would even get to the story of Jesus and his life and what he's done for us. And that's obviously really important because now we live in that covenant of the new covenant that Jesus brought. So we wouldn't want to wait if someone's starting a Bible journey to take that long to get to Jesus, who really the whole Bible points to. So that's why we go back and forth between Old and New Testament books. But now we got to recapture the setting of where we are. So let's go back to the book of Numbers and figure out where we are and what the setting of it is. Numbers covers a time frame of the second year of Israel after they escaped Egypt in the Passover, and they went out in the desert. And you might remember in the book of Exodus, they got the law in Exodus chapter 20, and then they built the tabernacle where God's presence was going to be. And at the very end of the book of Exodus, it ends in glory with God coming to reside in the tabernacle, the tent-like structure that had a fence around it in the desert, and all of Israel is camped around it. They have already had many times where they've turned away from God in the first year after they escaped Egypt and they're out in the desert. They complained about water. They complained about food. They worshiped a golden calf when Moses went away, but God kept giving them grace and opportunity, and now he's dwelling in their midst. And this is probably for a little bit of a season here, a time when they are following God well, because he's really made himself known through the law that they've got. Now they have God's written instruction from Moses, and his presence is being shown through smoke and fire over the tabernacle. And they're all camped around with the doors of their fence facing where God's presence was in that tabernacle. So there's a proximity that helps them. But unfortunately, they're going to continue to be wayward. And the first 14 chapters of this book cover just the next year. So the second year. Now, as you may know, they're going to end up spending 40 years in the desert. It really shouldn't have been like that. They should have went from Egypt into the desert, gotten the law, gotten their act together, and then went in and took over the promised land, which is where they're headed. But because of their waywardness, as we'll see as we continue in the journey of Numbers, God's going to say, I'm not taking this generation. This generation can't be trusted, and you're going to have to wait 40 years in the desert. I'm going to raise up a new generation of your children, and they're going to be the ones that are going to lead us into the promised land, because you guys have proven to be unfaithful and untrustworthy. So that's why they spend 40 years in the desert. So the first 14 chapters cover year two. What's really interesting is there's about 5 or 6 chapters that cover the next 37 years. It's really a time of waiting because they're being punished and they're going to have to wait. And then the last, the remaining chapters of the book from around chapter 20 on are going to cover the last year right before they go to enter the promised land. So picture them now camped around the tabernacle out in the desert, were in year two of their escape from Egypt. And let's go ahead and pick it up now. Now, a couple other things real quick is Numbers is given because there's a number of censuses taken, and God actually asks for this one here. You know, sometimes he doesn't always like it when they take a census on their own, but he's going to ask one here because they have to be prepared for war to enter the promised land. So they're going to figure out how strong they are and how many people they've got, you know, with God on their side to go to the promised land. So that's how this book's going to begin. And because it deals with the numbers of Israel and the censuses, it's given the book Numbers. But you could probably call this book something like Israel's Journey in the Wilderness, because the entire book of Numbers, they're out in the desert, in the wilderness. So that's the season we're covering. All right, verse 1 of Numbers 1. Then the Lord spoke to Moses in the wilderness of Sinai, in the tent of meeting, on the first of the second month, in the second year after they had come out of the land of Egypt, saying, take a census of all the congregation of the sons of Israel by their families, by their fathers' households, according to the number of names, every male, head by head, from 20 years old and upward, whoever is able to go to war in Israel, you and Aaron shall number them by their armies. With you, moreover, there shall be a man of each tribe, each one head of his father's household. These then are the names of the men who shall stand with you: of Reuben, Eluzer, the son of Shedeur; of Simeon, Shelumiel, and the son of Zershadi; of Judah, Nishan, the son of Amminadab; of Issachar, Nathaniel, and son of Zur; of Zebulun, Eliab, the son of Helon, and the sons of Joseph; of Ephraim, Elishama, the son of Amihud; of Manasseh, Gamaliel, the son of Peduzer; of Benjamin. Now, you know, we're getting all these names of the different tribes of Jacob's family and getting the, you know, the names of those tribes. Now, maybe you've heard me talk about this before, but I'll just pause here for a moment. Almost none of the words of the Bible, if we look them up, especially names, but even more than names, if we were to look up words, say, in Hebrew and or in Greek, and then they're transliterated into English. So, you know, these are words here are in Hebrew and they're made into English. Now, if we tried to pronounce them all correctly, we would have to stop and hit, like I use Blue Letter Bible, and we'd have to hit a pronunciation of every single word. Just know that most of the time we're all wrong. You know, I don't care, pastors, whomever. What happens is we learn ways of pronouncing words based on the way someone else pronounced them. And then what happens is we assume, because that's just been the common way that we've learned to pronounce it, that that's the right way. And then we'll correct someone because they'll say it kind of funny. Or if we do correct someone, we really shouldn't. But if we did, we correct them to what we think is normative as far as the pronunciation. But we should never really do that, because our normative way that we think something's pronounced is wrong almost every single time. You know, you can play with this if you use an app. I use Blue Letter Bible, where you can, again, hit the word to have it play out a pronunciation, and you'll see we almost never pronounce things correctly in that regard. So I just don't worry about that, and I tell people not to worry about that. You just work through these names and just do the best you can, but it doesn't, you know, it's not the most significant thing, and it would take a tremendous amount of time to learn how to pronunciate each word, and I don't think it's worth the effort. But occasionally, as you see, I do check because it's interesting. Usually it's kind of humorous to me because it shows how wrong we are. But anyways, picking it up in verse 11, of Benjamin, Abidan, the son of Gideoni; of Dan, Ahazer, the son of Amishadai, of Asher, Pagiel, the son of Ochran; of Gad, Eliasaph, the son of Duel; of Naphtali, Ahira, the son of Enan. These are they who were called of the congregation, the leaders of their fathers' tribes. They were the heads of divisions of Israel. Now, another quick word that I want to share with you is, you know, yes, reading through a census, reading through names doesn't always seem to be the most interesting thing. And I would agree in that regard. But there are names here of people that are in the family line of Jesus. There are names here of people that will come up in other books of the Bible, and they can be important. And sometimes when we get to those books, sometimes we will turn back to these names to see who their fathers were and how they led either to the family line of Jesus or the family line of David. And they are helpful to understanding the history of God's people. So, you know, I just encourage you to kind of strengthen your resolve to take in the whole counsel of God's word, even parts that aren't as interesting as others. Now, this book has much interest. So don't think that this whole book is going to be about names and censuses. There is that, but there's so much more. So stick with us in the journey. I believe God is pleased when you do. All right. So Moses and Aaron, verse 17, took these men who had been designated by name, and they assembled all the congregation together on the first of the second month. So we're like 13 months into the journey. Then they registered by ancestry in their families, by their fathers' households, according to the number of names from 20 years old and upward, head by head, just as the Lord commanded Moses. So he numbered them in the wilderness of Sinai. Now the sons of Reuben, Israel's firstborn, their generation, their genealogical registration by their families, by their fathers' households, according to the number of names head by head, every male from 20 years old and upward, whoever was able to go out to war, they're numbered. The men of the tribe of Reuben were 46,500. Now I'm going to speed up for you because he uses that same paragraph to state the numbers of each tribe. And I'm going to speed up and just give you the number of that tribe. So then it says this: of the son of Simeon, and there were 59,300. Of the sons of Gad, there were 45,650. Of the sons of Judah, there were 74,600. Of the sons of Issachar, there were 54,400. Of the sons of Zebulun, there were 57,400. Of the sons of Joseph, there were 40,500. Of the sons of Manasseh, there were 32,200. Of the sons of Benjamin, there were 35,400. Of the sons of Dan, there were 62,700. Asher, 41,500. Naphtali, 53,400. All right, and here's where we get to the summation then. These are the ones who were numbered, whom Moses and Aaron numbered with the leaders of Israel, 12 men, each of whom was of his father's household. So all the numbered men of the sons of Israel by their father's households from 20 years old and upward, whoever was able to go out to war. Now, the total number was 603,550. Now, this was of men 20 years old and up. So we get to several million people in total family. You know, it's an estimate at this point. But I take it literal, and I just trust the Bible that knows what it's doing. So that there was a big throng of people that came out of Egypt. The Levites, however, were not numbered among them by their father's tribe. Now remember, the Levites were from the Levites, from that tribe. They took care of the tabernacle, and they became the priests. Not all Levites were priests, but the priests came from the tribe of Levites. But the Levites were, even if they weren't a priest, they were given the responsibility of carrying and transporting the tabernacle when they moved through the wilderness and then ultimately into the promised land. For the Lord had spoken to Moses, saying, "Only the tribe of Levi you shall not number, nor shall you take their census among the sons of Israel, but you shall appoint the Levites over the tabernacle of the testimony and over all its furnishings and over all that belongs to it. They shall carry the tabernacle and all its furnishings, and they shall take care of it. They shall also camp around the tabernacle the Levites camped directly around the tabernacle, and then everyone else camped around them. And that way they were like protecting the tabernacle from someone just like rushing in on it, even from the, you know, even from Israel, because that wasn't supposed to be. So when the tabernacle is to set out, the Levites shall take it down. And when the tabernacle encamps, the Levites shall set it up. But the layman who comes near shall be put to death. Like, no one else is supposed to be touching the tabernacle unless they're coming, you know, into it as a priest, which would be the Levites too, and Moses and Aaron. But the layman who comes near shall be put to death. The sons of Israel shall camp, each man by his own camp and each man by his own standard, according to their armies. They were very like orderly in how they camped out and how they moved and where they placed their tents. It was very orderly. And God's the one who set that up. And you might remember the instructions for the tabernacle to build it. It was very orderly. It was very detailed. God is more orderly and detailed than what people think. And, you know, that's why things happen the way they've happened throughout history. And God said it would happen, and then it happened. Even the stars and the moon and, you know, things happen, you know, Passover and Pentecost, and so many things happen specifically and strategically, just like God went. He has more detailed mind than what we give him credit for. It's quite remarkable, actually. That's why he can tie together Old and New Testaments the way he does. But the Levites shall camp around the tabernacle of the testimony, so that there will be no wrath on the congregation of the sons of Israel, meaning if they were to bust in on it, and Levites are supposed to kind of guard it. So the Levites shall keep charge of the tabernacle of the testimony. Thus the sons of Israel did, according to all which the Lord had commanded Moses, so they did. So here, look, that's quite an interesting statement. You know, despite the waywardness in the first year of Israel coming out of Egypt in the desert, they did a lot wrong. But now that God's presence has showed up in the tabernacle, at this moment in time, they're doing everything that the Lord commanded, just as he commanded. They built it as he commanded. They worshiped him after it was set up. And now they're listening well to God for a period of time here, but that's not going to last the whole time. So there we have it, Numbers chapter 1. There's going to be many interesting things coming up. God bless you. I know the Lord is pleased that you are taking in the whole counsel of God's word. I believe your faith will be rewarded, and even your fruitfulness in life will be greater because of your journey through the word of God. God bless you all.